Good evening, LSU sports fans across this fine nation. This is the Ghost Show, the original LSU podcast, coming to you in conjunction with AndTheValleyShow.com, the number one LSU sports blog website for 52,000 weeks and counting, 52,000 plus weeks and counting. I am your host tonight, Carrie Muntz, as always. You know me as Big Wee, and with me tonight, my partner, my life partner, that didn't come out right, but my good friend, Mr. Patrick Morris, is with me tonight on the phone. Hey, what's up, Pat?
Hey, it's been a while. I'm glad to be back.
It has been a while. It's been since March, and also with us tonight is ATVS blogger, Billy Gamilla. What's up, Billy?
Hi, fellas. How you doing?
Doing fine. Billy, just since you're new to the show here, just kind of, I know you're not a frequent blogger, but on ATVS, but what do you mostly, do you blog strictly on one thing and you kind of go in different areas, or you concentrate more on football, baseball?
I'm much more of a football-oriented guy. I mean, I'm more apt to make a baseball comment here or there, but I certainly don't pretend to know as much about some of the other guys, as much as some of the other guys who write about it. So I'll leave it to them and chime in when I can.
I think we all got good opinions on football, so there can never be enough opinions on football, and that's something we'll dive into in detail about on tonight's show. On tonight's show, we're going to discuss, in depth. We'll talk about the spring game, and we'll talk about LSU baseball for the most part tonight. Pushing the buttons, controlling the airwaves, the man who edits this program and chops it up. He's also the managing editor of ATVS.com, Mr. Podcat. You don't need to say anything else. We call him Triple P. Podcat, the PF4 pimp, coming to us. He's quietly back there, just probably flipping me off now as I continually try to find ways to poke fun at him, as I always do. But let's go ahead and kick things off. As I stated, this is the Go Show, your original LSU podcast. You can email us at, it's been so long, GoShow at End of LSU. No, wait, what's the email address, Podcat? I forgot.
Either GoShow@gmail.com or AndTheValleyShook@gmail.com. Either one will get to us somehow.
Simple enough. And for you lifers, you know how to spell that by now, G-A-U-X. And if I have to spell AndTheValleyShook, then you need to go back in second grade. I'm not spelling that again. So let's kick things right off. I should also mention that the Go Show is on Facebook. If you want to become a fan of us, please do so. Constantly, we have daily links to ATVS blogs and different articles, different links around the SB Nation world. There's people that are familiar with AndTheValleyShook.com know about SB Nation. They I guess they kind of own the mini blogs that go on between different teams. Is that for different schools? Is that correct?
Yeah, they hire out bloggers for all sorts of things. I think they're even starting to do, like, premiership soccer in the U.K. now. It's ridiculous.
They've even got a pro wrestling blog.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. If it was 10 years ago, I'd be all over that. But I kind of grew up and got out of that. So.
Yeah.
Not me.
Getting kicked out of the cage and home watching a SmackDown taping was probably my low point in wrestling. And that's probably about the time I stopped watching it. So that's all I'm going to say about that answer. So.
Me and a couple of buddies made a trip to a pilgrimage, if you would, to Houston last year for WrestleMania. So that was my highlight.
I still go to WrestleMania just to say I've been. I've never been. I've been to a pay-per-view live event. I think it was the Royal Rumble came to New Orleans Arena about 6-7 years ago. And I went to that, but
I was there too.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Yeah, I was there.
So, but that's enough wrestling talk. This podcast I could see him. He's just, come on, Carrie, hurry it up. So last time we came to you was March. We didn't have a lot of good things to say about LSU basketball back then. We still don't. So we're not going to really wrap up the season in any kind of way, shape, or form. And in that regard, we're going to move right into, I guess we'll start out with spring football and just talk about baseball to end the program, because that's still currently taking place right now with the LSU baseball team. A little bit of a slump, lost like what, 9 of the last 10. They went from 32-6 to 34-15 now, so and 500 in SEC play, which is scary because they're in danger of not making the SEC tournament. So two more series left. But before we talk before we talk about that, we'll talk about spring football. Fellas, I mean, and Patrick, I'll start with you. The last time you and I talked, you know, about football really in-depthly was outside your house after the Capital One Bowl. Your thoughts on spring as a whole, Patrick? Did you see, I mean, obviously spring isn't a time where you're going to improve in a lot of areas. It's more of a getting to know the playbook type thing. It's, you know, getting new guys out on the field, even some young guys who are able to graduate high school early out on the field, you know, in some instances. But, you know, some of the things that happened over the spring, of course, the move for Russell Shepard from quarterback to wide receiver. And it's been so long since we talked, I forgot some of the other things that are going on. But, Patrick, just your overall, I guess, sense of where you think this football team is based off of, you know, spring performance and, you know, versus the way we ended the season against Penn State?
You know, spring did nothing for me this year at all. I mean, I did follow it a little bit. But you know what? I come out of this spring with more question marks than I had last spring. You know, the move of Russell Shepard. Yeah, it's great that we moved Russell Shepard. Okay, big deal. But now the big question is how you can get the ball in his hands. We still don't have a quarterback, so to speak, that, you know, anybody feels confident about. We still have questions about this coaching staff, which are going to be questions. And if he comes out the gate slow, look at your first 5-6 games, you know, up leading through Florida, we could be a 3-3 team easy. Easy going, you know, coming out of that game. And then at that point, you're looking to see, okay, whose head's going to roll. You know, you still got the Michigan rumors. You still got all this other stuff out there. I come out of this more questions than answers out of this. I don't even think it set a depth chart this spring. Usually a spring football, it helps you to kind of set a depth chart going into the fall. I still don't even think we have that. You know, and then we've had more off-season. Maybe we have off-season issues in the past, you know, normally, but a good team, it kind of gets under the rug. But now that we're struggling a little bit, well, now they're all coming to light a little bit more, you know, a bar fight here, a drunk driving arrest for T-Bob, you know, different little things like that. And then you have, you know, what is Miles going to do? He's got to get this team back under control, and that's what the spring should have been for, and it didn't work. And that's, you know, so I'm really, really, if anything, the spring made me more scared going into the next season, you know, and even that, the fact that I just paid my football tickets and I'm like, okay, you know, what the hell would I pay this for? Because I don't even know what kind of product I'm going to get when I go to a game.
You pay for those football tickets basically for us to hang out in the parade grounds and enjoy ourselves for 7 hours before we go watch some football.
True.
But, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. But I hear you. I mean, it's, you know, I went in, you know, coming off of, you know, thinking back to that rant. I don't even want to really call it a show. It was more like an hour-long just frustration rant going on between all of us outside of your house that afternoon about what we just saw on the field. And, you know, a lot of us sat down. We were talking 500 going into the season, 6-6. You know, 7-5, but you know, I look at the schedule, and you're right. I mean, you talk about virtually. I mean, it's a neutral side game, but you're going on the road to the Georgia Dome to play a very improving North Carolina team who has a pretty good defense, and they got some guys on offense. They got some playmakers on offense, and that's gonna be a tough out. It's gonna be a good test for us early in the season. If we have trouble, you know, moving the ball, and the first thing I'm going to be looking at is, you know, our line play on both sides of the football, because that is where we lost games last year. That's where we struggled. So, I mean, that's the most important part. It seems like in the spring we kind of, you know, made a few strides on the defensive line, but offensive line still, you know, you really don't know. And then with the T-Bob Abaz situation going on now, with him getting arrested for the BWI, he's suspended from the football team now. Will he get reinstated for fall practice? I imagine so. I mean, they're going to kick him off the team. They're going to kick him off the team right then and there. And, I mean, granted, Ryan Farrell was given 3 or 4 chances, and he was also the quarterback. But I don't think T-Bob's getting kicked off the team, you know, definitely. I think he's suspended.
If it's some no-name player that doesn't play, he's off the team. T-Bob plays a little bit, therefore he's still on the team.
Yeah.
Well,
Grant, go ahead, Billy.
I said something I think you have to keep in mind is he suffered a pretty serious leg injury, and there's not there's no guarantee he's going to come back from that period, given that it's going to be his second major. He's going to have to have, he may have had it by now, but he had to have major surgery, and, you know, two major surgeries on, I think it was the same leg, inside of, you know, inside of a calendar year. I mean, for any athlete, you know, it may reach a point where the pain of what he'd have to play through day to day and practice with may not be worth it to him, given that, you know, he may not be, you know, a future high draft pick or anything like that.
Right, so, and would we all agree that he was probably our best returning lineman? I mean, he was kind of overlooked, I thought, that he did a pretty good job against Terrence Cody in the Alabama game. That was one of the things that kind of flew by the wayside, but he held his own against Cody. In my opinion, I thought he was good last season. I mean, he wasn't great, but I mean, coming back when the offensive line had already lost, and we'd be losing Sonnen Black. I mean, who is our best returning lineman? Is it him? Is it some of the names escape me? Barksdale? I mean,
I think it's worth pointing out that PJ Lonergan appeared to have, you know, taking the starting spot from T-Bob. You know, he didn't have, a great year, but I think he's got great potential as Josh Jurasik. You know, he was a little on the skinny side last year, but he plays a really good technique, and he's a mean sumbitch. And I think that's certainly a really important quality in an interior lineman. And I think he added he appeared to, at least, to be to fill that a little bit in the spring.
You know, that's
game.
A good point. I mean, look at when our line was good, you had people with the character of, like, Andrew Whitworth and those guys. The guys that just wanted to rip your head off when they came through the line.
Steven Peterman. Mm-hmm. Steven Peterman comes to mind right away.
Oh, yeah.
Steven Peterman was a beast. Alan Faneca, think about when he was there. I mean,
really, they rip your head off coming through the line. You didn't want to get in their way. You would see old films of defenders that they would kind of play them off to the side just to try and get out their way and then make a tackle.
Yeah. Well, there's an old saying, one of my old boss of mine used to say that he thought Peterman was a dirty player, and I told him, I said, look, you name me a good offensive lineman, he's probably a dirty player.
Mm-hmm.
He'll probably take a shot when he can get it. He'll peel off the pile when he can get it. You know, the good ones learn when to do it when the referee's back is turned, I think is what it comes down to.
You know how to do it. You know how to do it, you know, what's a good word I'm looking for, I guess, succinctly. You know, way you're not going to get caught.
Yeah.
You know, it's not holding unless you get caught. I mean,
yeah.
It was an old trick of the trade they used to wear. If you're playing at home in LSU's case, you would wear darker lineman gloves because it was harder for the referees to see your hands on a jersey if you have a dark glove going up against a dark jersey, vice versa.
But you know what?
White jersey,
it's okay to get
white
that
shirt.
Reputation.
Oh, yeah, without question. I mean, I think it's good to have a reputation like that if you're an offensive lineman. I mean, it's, you don't win awards for being a good guy.
It's intimidating to the opposing team in a way, you know, and that's kind of what you look at.
You know, my own thoughts on the offensive line after watching the spring game, I mean, you can only tell so much. I think they'll be improved if for no other reason than they really couldn't get any worse. My question mark would be Barksdale moving to left tackle. He did not, I think, have a particularly great year at right tackle. He did appear to slim down a little bit, which I think will help him deal with the faster guys. Little known fact that's come to my attention recently, Sonnen Black, you know, he caught a lot of flack for his senior year, and he certainly didn't play well. Apparently, he was playing with a pretty serious knee injury, which is also part of why he's still on the street and hasn't been signed by any NFL team yet. It's the kind of – Mike Dettier said on the radio, it's the kind of thing that even surgery, he's probably still going to be playing in pain. So it's
unfortunate.
NFL teams aren't in the habit of picking players up just to give them a free knee surgery.
Right. Because after his sophomore year, you were talking about potentially a first-round draft pick.
That's
unfortunate for him. But, you know, and to move things along and kind of switch gears from the offensive line, and I guess we really won't see how this will affect the team in any way, shape, or form until season starts with the addition of Billy Gonzalez as, you know, wide receiver coach / passing game coordinator, whatever you want to call it. Just to see kind of, I mean, we saw him do a couple things in spring practice. It was kind of that was kind of encouraging. We saw, in the spring game, they utilized Russell Shepard in ways and got him the ball. And it's been so long since we looked at the stats from that game, but I want to see he had somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 total yards, like 50 receiving and 30 rushing. So he was fancy.
And that's not to mention the one that he missed in his hands. They had a couple breakouts that, you know, he's still learning the game, that he short-armed, that he was just wide open.
Yeah. Give me a second. I can call up the stats. But, yeah, he had some issues catching the ball, but I think they threw to him about five times, but they also gave him about six carries.
Uh-huh.
So I think it may be a situation where the word Percy position is getting thrown around as maybe that's what their spot will be for him, where, Percy Harvin, for most of his career, he caught about five, six passes a game, and he carried the ball about five, six times a game. You know, he was every bit the running back that he was a receiver. And he had Shepard in the spring game, eight carries for 66 yards, two catches for 36 yards.
Okay, that's good.
It's a little north of 100 yards from scrimmage.
Yeah. And talking about the dropsies, I mean, it's important. I mean, Jordan Jefferson has to take some type of leadership role and get with his receivers and do these 7-on-7s during the off season before they get into fall practice and develop some kind of camaraderie with these receivers and they have to show some type of commitment to wanting to get better. I mean, if they can't, if they don't want to, then something's wrong there. You question your leadership on the team, you question their commitment to the team, and you question the ability of the coaches to get these guys to play and to go all out, I guess, for them.
Well, I would really think with a new receivers coach coming in that they would, they'd have something to prove to him just to at least get on that field.
Right. So, I mean, what I'm trying to get at. I mean, I guess it's just important to see that somebody is stepping up during the off season and leading the way. I mean, we've talked about in the past about, Gary Crow and the development of Jordan Jefferson. I mean, I think, something needs to change offensively in the scheme and what we're trying to do. And, we ran a lot of option last year and it never worked. And the reason why we tried to do that so often was just to disguise how bad the interior offensive line was and how we couldn't run the ball up the gut. But we couldn't run an option either, because you can't run an option when the spacing between a quarterback and a running back is about 6 inches. I mean, that's shit, and I'm exaggerating a little bit. It's probably about a yard, but you need to be 5 yards apart.
No.
It's good for a change-up if you run it right, but, the option went out with Tom Osborne at Nebraska.
Yeah, it was never run right. I mean Georgia
well,
State running it this year, but, I mean,
he's now, he's not an option quarterback. He didn't run it in high school.
Not at all.
And it's not the kind of play that you can just – take any quarterback that happens to, have quick feet and say, here, go run this. It's the kind of play you got to run and you got to run and you got to work those reads. I mean, I've seen the option work with quarterbacks that weren't all that mobile, but they could make good decisions and they knew when to hand it to the fullback or when to keep it. And even if they only picked up, 3 or 4 yards, you keep doing that, defense is eventually going to leave somebody open, whether it's the pitch or whether it's the dive or something, which is
right.
Why the option really does still work. I mean, it's changed from a formation standpoint, but the principles still apply.
And it was just painfully obvious that Jordan Jefferson was just uncomfortable running that play during the season and in game situations. But switching gear to defense, and this is always it's pretty much cliche to say spring the defense always is ahead of the offense. Mostly because it's, offense you're putting in more packages, where defense is more, it's more structured, it's more simplified, it's a lot different, football season, during the season, I guess a little bit more goes on the defense because you're scheming for different offenses every week. But springtime, it's just pretty simplified. It's just line up and, let's hit. But from a defensive standpoint, again, like what Pat was saying, there's not a lot of answers. You're not going to get a lot of answers during the spring. I mean, if you want to talk about what you want to see, come September against North Carolina, you definitely want to see a defensive line that can get to the quarterback a little bit better. And, a defensive line that looks a little bit better conditioned and a little bit quicker, because that watching them at times last season was just it was rough.
It was painful. I mean, it was bend but don't break type of defense, and you wanted, you know, and you're like, oh, when the heck are we going to get some pressure? Like, I mean, we're used to seeing that pressure not coming with the linebackers and everybody else, but with the D line getting a push on it, and then your linebacker comes through and they have no chance.
Yeah. Well, I think you just didn't have that kind of personnel on your defensive line last year.
No, that's what I'm saying, but it's still a matter of they got pushed around. We need to get bigger and we need to get stronger. We really have a strength problem on the line right now.
Well, and I think defensively, you know, from what I've seen, I think the strength's going to definitely be in the back seven where you got or in the secondary anyway, with, you know, with Patrick Peterson. Morris Claiborne looks like he's, you know, a little raw still, but certainly got some good ability at cornerback, you know, and then you've got some veterans and some talented young guys like Craig Lawson at safety. So I think the secondary's going to be solid. Defensive line, I think it's the same thing where, you know, they can't help but be better, and they're going to be deeper, I think, with guys, you know, getting their red shirts pulled off like Sam Montgomery, Barkevious Mingo, you know, and they're not big guys. The junior college transfer Ken Adams, who supposedly ran a very low 40 time in a recent workout, alleged. I mean, you know how 40 times are. You don't know how much stock to put in them. I think they're going to be. The question right now is going to be bulk for playing, you know, the Alabamas and the Ole Misses, who are just going to line up and run the ball right at you. As far as the smaller teams, I think we're going to have a quick defensive line that should be a little bit better at getting pressure with four guys and not having to necessarily blitz on every down to get pressure, which is really kind of the only way they ever got to anybody last year, was an all-out blitz.
Yeah. But and switching back gears to offense a little bit, I wanted to talk a little bit about the running backs. And, you know, Michael Ford, you know, had a pretty good spring game. I mean, Stephen Ridley had a decent spring game. A couple of incoming freshmen that might get some playing time, too, I think, as well. I mean, Ja'Cory Gore and the other guy escapes me.
Spencer Ware.
Right now. Spencer Ware, thank you. Those two, Billy, in your opinion, which guy do you think has a better chance of seeing the field as a true freshman?
Well, special teams is going to come into play. If one of them, you know, can jumps in as maybe a kick returner, that certainly gives him the leg up in that scenario. I do think that a freshman is going to get some playing time, and it might just be Michael Ford. But, you know, it's one of those things where it depends. You know, if Michael Ford steps up and does a really good job, then there's less of a need for Spencer Ware to get in the game, you know, and ditto for Stephen Ridley. And that goes back to something that I wrote about 2 weeks ago about the offense. And, you know, just a theory of mine after watching the spring game a couple more times and watching some cut-ups and some clips of Florida from last year and some other spread teams in recent years, I'm wondering if maybe, you know, we talk about Billy Gonzalez as being the passing game coordinator, if maybe he has a bigger impact on this team in the running game and maybe bringing some of Florida's running game touches to this team, you know, with the zone read being a bigger part of the offense, which, I mean, it's the option, but it's not the same kind of option that Jordan Jefferson struggled with so much. It's a little
right.
simpler.
Mm-hmm.
It fits a little more with the kind of offensive line that LSU has. And I think LSU has a little bit different kind of group of running backs to run it compared to last year. We've got a little more shake and bake in the backfield, whereas you know, Charles Scott and Keelan Williams really were that kind of that straight ahead
pounder
type of back.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if, and that's to me the biggest thing that was lacking last year with the offense was an identity, was a set of plays that this is what we are going to do. You know, whereas
stop us now, right?
In 2007, you knew LSU on a third and one was going to run the inside zone right behind Herman Johnson, whether it was with Jacob Hester or whether it was with Charles Scott. You know, you think of, you know, the Florida teams with Tim Tebow. They were going to run the zone read. They were going to run the speed option. They were going to run that veer dive play. I mean, and just you think of good offenses in general, they usually have a group of plays. This is their core of what they do, and everything else kind of builds off around that. And last year, LSU didn't have that. They had – you know, it was a case of trying to do so many different things and just doing none of them well. And I'm hoping, you know, that maybe this year with Gonzalez, that running game will become more of a focus on that collection of spread plays, you know, hopefully with, I mean, because I'm certainly skeptical as to what Richard Murphy's going to do coming off another knee injury. But, you know, with Stephen Ridley and Michael Ford, maybe with Ridley being that, you know, the between the tackles pounder type of guy and Ford being kind of the change of pace that can break the big play a little bit more, you know, you have a much better offensive line and a much better running game. You know, suddenly Jordan Jefferson doesn't have to do all that much. And we just saw Alabama win a national championship with a quarterback that, you know, on his best day was pretty mediocre. But
LSU's won two with a quarterback didn't have to do a lot. So we know what that's like. I mean, you win two national championships with quarterback the caliber of Matt Mark. Not that Matt Mark or Matt Flynn were bad quarterbacks, but they were quote unquote game managers. They knew they were smart guys who knew what to do. They knew, you know, where to when to get rid of the ball, when not to get rid of the ball, when to take a sack, and They had control of the huddle.
Yeah.
Jordan Jefferson just doesn't have control of the huddle, and that's evident. You know, no matter who you want to blame in the Ole Miss fiasco, didn't have control of that huddle.
No.
And you know, so that's something that, you know, I've talked about with other people is about, you know, Gary Croton's inability to develop a quarterback. I mean, we saw Jordan Jefferson come in late 2008 and. He didn't set the world on fire, but in the Arkansas game, you know, that year in 08, didn't play a bad game and played a pretty good Peach Bowl. And then you go through all season where they start, you know, drilling into his head certain game plan situations, and he just looked confused at times. The option is evident. And he looked like he was scared. Like in the 08 game against Arkansas, he looked like a guy who he dropped back the pass. If he didn't see a guy open, he just didn't hesitate and he took off the run. Last year, he looked like Jarrett Lee at times last year, where he didn't, like almost he was told, stay in the pocket, don't take off the run. That's not what we want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like there's too much information swimming around his head. He's having to think about too much, like you're saying. There's too much stuff going on and we did nothing well. And that was evident. That's where the problem lies. Developing that identity, I think, is important.
Well, and I think it's important to point out that you know, as much as he struggled at times last year, Jordan Jefferson still had a higher passer rating than Matt Flynn did in 2007. I think he's got the tools, maybe not to be an all-SEC quarterback, but he's a solid, accurate passer who isn't going to make a lot of back-breaking mistakes. You know, he might not do everything well, but I think he can do enough well with a good running game to not kill you and then make a couple plays down the field when he gets a good matchup. So,
good enough.
And the biggest thing to me is I think he was just consistently put in really bad situations, even in some games. I mean, the Florida game particularly, and it's become chic to say, well, you know, teams just stacked the box because they didn't respect the pass. Florida played with two high safeties that whole game and all but dared LSU to run the ball on them because they didn't think that, you know, even if we don't commit to an extra safety to the box, they can't block our front seven. And, you know, the result was George Jefferson getting put in a lot of third and longs against two, you know, top-shelf defensive ends behind an offensive line that wasn't that good. And he certainly had a problem with holding the ball, you know, longer than he needed to. So
Right. You're
going to take all that, all those ingredients, and then put it in the worst possible situation. You're not going to leave in backs and tight ends to help block. You're not going to call quick, short passes that force him to basically, one, two, get the ball out. And, you know, we saw – like the Auburn game where, you know, they instead of putting him in the shotgun with five receivers, they put him in the I formation with two. Three-step drop, throw a fade route to your 6'5" and 6'3" receivers, and he executed, you know, and he had his best game of the year. And that game plan went flawlessly, and it was the kind of thing, and that was what was so frustrating. You saw that great game plan, admittedly against a bad defense, but then you would see it against a better defense, and that game plan wasn't even attempted again. It was back to try to do this, and we'll try to do this, and we'll try to do this. And the result is trying to do too many things and not doing anything well.
Right, good enough. Patrick, anything more to add about football and spring?
No, I mean, there's really not much more to add. I just hope that, you know, there's no more off-season trouble. I hope they're going through their workouts and they really bust it out this summer. I mean, it was interesting, even in national pundits here. I was, you know, took a break at lunch today, and I got in the car. First thing they're talking about is Les Miles on the hot seat, you know?
Right.
I'm like, okay, we're in the dead off season, not even really talking about football, and yet they're talking about Les Miles being on a hot seat here.
Yeah.
Go to the ATVS homepage. There's a couple of links about that very thing, and that's something we can talk about for you know, days and weeks to come as we're getting closer to football season. And we will in great detail. But for purposes of tonight, this show in particular, we're going to switch gears to the baseball. And you know, 3 weeks ago, we're sitting. You know, we wasn't a dynamic 32-6, but we were 32-6. And, you know, three SEC series later and a couple of midweek games, we're sitting at 34-15. We've lost, you know, we've gone 2-9, you know, in the last 11 games. I mean, that's just, I mean, what has happened to this LSU baseball team? And I guess it's fair to say we, you know, Pose have pointed this out, you know, often, you know, whether it was on a show when we talked about it in the spring and early on about, you know, we thought we were a good team, but something was kind of missing from, you know, what we had last season, and it's really come to fruition. I mean, everybody's struggling. Renato just does not look like the pitcher, or is not the pitcher he was last season. Even some of our plug-in guys who, you know, would come, our serviceable guys who would come in and eat up some innings are not pitching well. Austin Ross, Bradshaw, Bertini, Mattiotta struggled at times this season, but, you know, perhaps I give him a little bit of a flyer because he almost, I guess almost all the weight's on him because, I mean, he's been asked to do a lot, you know, for a pitcher set that's really struggling. And then, you know, hitting at times has been very inconsistent. So, and then plus you go on a road against two very good SEC opponents, and what you get is two consecutive sweeps for the first time. And,
well, I mean, you know where we're kind of going downhill? Kerry, you know this. You know when we started going downhill?
When's that?
I think there's a reason that's sitting behind the scenes right now on the show.
Yeah, you went to the Alabama podcast?
No. Didn't somebody buy some tickets?
Bobcat bought tickets for, Alabama series. We swept
that
series.
I'm talking about, didn't he buy some CWF?
Yes, I bought tickets for Omaha, okay?
Oh, that's right.
They go out in a week, okay?
Right.
I had to buy then.
As soon as he buys a ticket, Trey Watkins dislocated shoulder. This happened. Renato can't come back from it. Boy, you know, I don't know. He needs to go to New Orleans. They got a voodoo witch doctor over there. We can send him to.
Now, okay, in podcast defense, I can take partial blame for this too because I was following I think it was after we swept Alabama. There was a midweek game right after that. And we were smoking somebody. I can't remember who. And Podcat was doing a play-by-play on ATVS like he always does every game. And the guy, Podcat, you're fairly committed to doing that. I'm impressed. And comment. I posted a comment. No problem. That doesn't speak to what your social life is like, huh?
Really?
I'm sorry.
Come
dude,
on now.
Come out. I know. Podcat, we love you. We love you, dude. But I posted a comment saying that I think this baseball team is starting to hit its stride. And, I mean, 9 of the last 10.
We hit a stride, all right.
Yeah, we hit a stride. Yeah, I didn't specify what kind of stride, but we hit a stride. But, you know, regardless, I mean, this is the situation we're in, and I don't have the standings pulled up because, as anybody knows, I don't do a lot of homework and research for this. We're 12-12 in the SEC. I know that. And I know they take the top eight, not records, to go to the SEC tournament, but the top eight winning percentages, so which I guess kind of ties in hand-in-hand, records versus winning percentages. I mean, they all play the same amount of games, you know,
rainouts
or whatnot.
That's the ticket this year because Vanderbilt, who is very close, honestly, if Vanderbilt's two games in Nashville against Georgia, which, I mean, let's face it, as bad as Georgia is, those are wins, you know. Because of them not having those two games, their winning percentage is a little down. And at this point, they're neck and neck with us.
For the last spot? Is that what you're saying?
No, we're both. I think we're. It's either fifth and sixth or sixth and seventh in the listings.
Okay.
But it's very close. And after this weekend, if Vanderbilt had actually been able to play and beat Georgia in those games, they would be ahead of us. We'd be seventh, and I think, we'd be seventh, and it'd be Kentucky, it'd be Kentucky who would probably be fighting out for us.
Bottom line, okay, we're playing two of the bottom dwellers coming up. If we can't do it, we don't deserve it if we can't do it in these next couple weekends.
Right. I mean, regardless of what happens and whether or not we make the SEC tournament or not, I mean, even if we do not make the SEC tournament, I mean, I'm pretty sure we still get invited to a regional. Am I correct?
I can't imagine we wouldn't be. The difficult thing will be, I don't know if we would host.
I don't think you would. No way you would host if you don't make your own conference tournament. And LSU's had the benefit of playing in a stadium that they sell out pretty consistently for regionals. And, you know, I'm sure there have been years where we've gotten regionals that we didn't, other teams maybe based on, you know, their play on the field maybe deserved a little bit more. And LSU's going to get a lot of benefit of the doubt, but you're not going to get that kind of benefit of the doubt. And nor should they if you don't make your own conference tournament.
Bottom line is we got to have somebody step up. I mean, it was good to see that Watkins finally came in the game and ran last weekend. I thought that would have been a little bit of spark. That's the kind of spark we need. We got to get Mata back into the position in the batting lineup where he can actually do some damage and protect some other people, such as a Blake Dean or such as a Micah Gibbs, where they can really take hold, and you got your leadoff man back at that point. We really got to get that in the lineup.
I mean, it's almost gotten this. It's been kind of a snowball effect where things have gone wrong, and some guys are pressing, and some guys have gotten down on themselves, and losing's contagious. It is. We've seen it in football, where. I mean, you've seen it with other teams. You've seen it with pro teams, with college teams, in multiple sports, where everything kind of just goes down the tubes, not everybody responds to it the way that you would want, because some people are going to try too hard. Some people are going to say, "Well, screw this. Nothing I'm doing is working anyway." And it's the sense that just this team needs something that gets their confidence going, not a 10-inning win over Vanderbilt.
No, what they could use is, I mean, look what kick-started us, in the last couple times we really made runs, where we've had we've been down like in an eighth or a ninth inning by like six, seven runs, and we've come back to win those games. Something that really got them excited and said, look, we can do this at any point. And, that's the kind of spark that I think they need. I hate to say it, but let them go down and be down in a game in the seventh and eighth inning by six, seven, as long and have that big, huge comeback. It gets everybody excited, the crowd, the players, everybody's jumping into it. That's what's kickstarted us in the last couple of 3 years.
Well, and I agree that's what's kickstarted us in recent years, but the thing is this team hasn't had a problem coming back on people this year. I think what it needs is really for Anthony Rinaldo to go out on a Friday night and, throw that six or seven inning, three or four hit, one or two earned run game that just lets it, hey, I'm back and I'm going to kick some butt down this stretch.
What you're going into every Friday night is us down 3-4-0 in the first inning. It seems like it's been that way for the last three weekends. And, even go back, the Ole Miss series, you almost can't fault the Ole Miss series because I think every game was decided by one or two runs, if I'm not mistaken. And in Florida, we just got pummeled. We just got our ass handed to us against Florida.
We got ripped.
A couple of bounces here and at Ole Miss series. I mean, maybe we take two out of three, or maybe we at least get one. We still got some kind of confidence. But it just seems they went, they went back to back SEC series on the road, and after losing three tough games like that to, a team the caliber of Ole Miss, and go back and play a team the caliber of Florida. It's tough, and they just looked. It was LeBron-esque against Florida. Mm-hmm. It was disinteresting. It was just nobody had any confidence. It was
one bright spot last weekend was Rittner. You don't have to come in, throw hard, do whatever.
Yeah.
It's locating, and that's the biggest problem with our pitchers this year: locating their pitches. They have been unable to locate. I don't know. maybe we need to raise the mound up another 2 inches so that they come down on it and the ball dives down on them or something. But everything, and that's not just Renato, but every pitcher is up around that chest high, waist to chest high. They're not at the knees. Everything is up, and the ball is flat, and they're just yanking it. It's in the eye level of the batter.
Pitch location and situational pitching. I think they flashed a stat on CST on Sunday that of all the runs Vandy scored over the weekend, I think 17 out of 21 was scored with two outs. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, to have that many runs scored on you with two outs, I mean, that's just, that hurts. I mean, that just hurts. And how many and how often have you seen a lot of our pitchers, whether no matter who it is, go two strikes on a batter and hit a batter, give up a home run, give up a key base hit? I mean, it happened all weekend, I think, against Ole Miss a lot. I think
it happened
against Vandy. So, you know.
Where is that out pitch? Where is that one where you're going to get the batter off guard? You know, and a lot of this is, you know, that's coaches calling the pitching. Now, granted, Micah Gibbs does call a lot of the pitches. That is a note that he is calling a lot of the pitches. But, you know, at some point you got to say, okay, well, you know, he's calling a lot of pitches. That's great. You know, I think he knows his pitches. It's great to have a catcher like that. And if anybody has to be the leader on a team, that would be it. But at some point, your coaches that are getting paid to do that, you step in, look, I'm calling this game completely, or I'm doing this, and this is what we're going to do, and he's going to throw what I'm telling him to throw. If I screw up, there it is. But at least the pitcher doesn't have to think about it anymore. Neither does the catcher or the baseball players in the field. It is what it is. You play the pitch that's being pitched because the coach is calling it, and that's what we're going to do.
Right. And the good thing is you talk about two of the bottom dwellers we've got coming up. I think we got Kentucky this weekend, and we finish with Mississippi State next weekend. We don't think midweek games are done. I know we don't have any this week or didn't have any this week.
Well, we have one left.
One more.
We have one left, and it's going to be weird. It's against Tulane. It's going to be the first time we've been in Turchin since Katrina at least. And it's going to be weird because I'm looking at this place. They have field turf, and it's an outdoor stadium. It's field turf everywhere except the mound. The dirt is just carpet that's painted brown. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've been there. It is a wacky feel.
Huh. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. But I pointed it out earlier. Mississippi State does not have a win in the division. If we don't sweep them, that's it. There's no reason why we shouldn't sweep Mississippi State in 2 weekends.
No.
So, I mean, we still got lots to play for. I mean, it's not, you know, it's funny how we talk about, you know, the off season. You know, we talk about football, how, you know, 9-4 was just, you know, unsatisfactory. And right now, you know, the way things are going, baseball-wise, it's not looking up either. But the difference is baseball, you still have a, you know, you're still going to be in a regional. You might not be hosting, but and you get in a regional and it's double elimination, you know, all the way through. So
you just don't want to wind up in that Texas regional or something crazy like that, where they, you know, where they're just coming with God knows the pitching at Texas or something crazy.
But it doesn't matter, because if things don't get better with the pitching staff and we don't start getting some, you know, some better efforts, and we don't start, you know, if we keep falling behind 4-0. All the time, we're not going to last very long, especially when we get the regional play, because all those teams will be throwing out their best pitchers all the time. So I mean, it's, you know, and that's pretty much where it lies. I mean, it's, you know, will somebody step up on his team and, you know, lead this team? We'll from there get these guys, you know, in order and really click for a couple of pitchers at least for, you know, a couple of months. I mean, I don't expect them to. You know, I'd like to see him go to Omaha. I don't expect him to win a national championship this year. I didn't go into the season thinking they would. But, to see it, you know, end like this, losing, you know, just getting, you know, losing two straight, getting swept two straight SEC series and 7-game losing streak, it's just, it's a hard pill to swallow knowing that this is the last season in Rosenblatt Stadium. That's been the toughest thing for me. As you know, I can't imagine, you know, watching the College World Series this year and not having at least LSU being in it, you know, so.
That's kind of where I'm at on that. It just comes down to, in baseball, I mean, whatever level you're playing at, you can't pitch, you can't win. And right now we can't pitch.
Right.
You know, I mean,
got to get hot. They got to get hot. They got to get some confidence. That's bottom line on this team. They got 2 weeks
so,
to do it on in SEC play. You know, if they can do it, heck yeah, we can turn around and get to Omaha. But they continue
Hopefully another few weeks, maybe we're talking about this LSU baseball team going to Omaha. But, you know, a lot of things have to change. So,
And then podcast can enjoy the zoo.
Oh, well, on that note, guys, I gotta step out for a little while. I've tied up the phone for enough time.
That's good. Well, I think we're pretty much done, Billy.
All right, guys. Well, it's good talking to y'all.
All right.
All right. Be in touch.
Okay.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. And that was ATVS correspondent Billy Gamilla with us on the call tonight. So, Patrick, I think that pretty much wraps it up for us. We got a little business to take care of this weekend. We'll take care of that. And Podcat, you got anything else?
No, that's it.
Podcat,
okay.
You take care of some business this weekend?
I should be taking care of some business this weekend. I do indeed plan on it.
That's outstanding.
Love it.
Fun
Love time. To hear it.
Fun times lay ahead. Well, this has been the Go Show. Your bi-monthly LSU podcast. And hopefully one day we will once again meet up and have a good roundtable discussion. We can talk for days and weeks about the LSU football team. I mean, just so many different avenues we could have gone into, but it was just, I mean, we're one of the time constraints here. And I mean, we got to really need to set aside where we can just lay out all the issues going into the fall. And we got plenty of time to do that because we still got, I mean, it's May. So, you know, hopefully we'll be talking about some good baseball news in a couple months. And then after that, we'll switch gears and it'll be totally focused on football, which is going to be fun. And that's when we're at our best. And hopefully everybody will stay with us. You know, as always, Patrick, thank you for joining me tonight. Thank you again to Billy, who just left us. And Podcat, we love and thank you as well. Holding up your end of the bargain, you are awesome. I don't know if anybody's told you that today, but you're doing some good things with the site. I enjoy going to the site. I hope all the fans enjoy going to the site because it's really got some good information. And I wish I had time to read everybody's blogs and all the links everybody posts. It's just really hard to get to all that stuff. But hopefully all the people listening can go to the site, endofvalleytruth.com, check out what's going on the site. It's got a lot of good information. In conjunction with them, it should be a really good Go Show year. We're going into our fifth season.
Yeah, fifth. Actually, I counted. We're going to be hitting 150 episodes somewhere during football season.
Man.
We've known Podcat 5 years at least.
That's Gilligan Island type numbers. Do you understand what 150 episodes is? That's Brady Bunch. I mean, that's Sherwood Schwartz. You know, we're up there. I mean, so.
Seinfeld, here we come.
When people think sitcom, they think Seinfeld, Brady Bunch,
Simpson.
Oh, we got a ways to go. I mean, Simpson's been on the air for 20 plus years. We got a ways to go. So, on that note, I'm going to say goodnight. Say goodnight, Patrick.
Goodnight, Patrick.
All right. This is the Go Show, your original podcast. We are done. Thank you and goodnight.